America gets ready to celebrate Independence Day coming up this weekend. Be safe if you're out there traveling.
Remember, this program is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
App. You also got us on SiriusXM Channel 371. I'm Mark Packer, sporting the Southern Fried Football T-shirt. Right there, West Durham.
Wow.
That is owned and operated, and they are for sale, by the way. Trademarked, so don't even try messing around with it. Because I know people who have, Wes, and it has not worked out well for them. I will find you.
No. No, it's not gone well, has it, owner?
Nope.
Owner-operator.
I am owner and operator of Southern Fried Football. I'm wearing my own gear today, so there it is. How about that? So what are you sporting over there down there in Georgia?
This is the Looper. It's a logoed apparel from Anderson Ord Golf. And I just like the fact that somebody put a caddy on it, Pac. I got to be honest about it. You know, like the guy with the hat on backwards holding the flag stick. Especially since we're not holding flag sticks. We're not even touching flag sticks right now. But I like the logo. All so right. I got Anderson Ord apparel on today.
Sweet. Like it.
EJ Manuel coming up. Lexi Joseph coming up. Tevin Mack coming up on this program, by the way. Lexi Joseph, Duke Lacrosse. Tevin Mack, former Clemson basketball stars, playing in the on the Power of the Paw team in the TBT that starts next week. And, of course, E.J. Manuel, one of our ACC network football analysts, will talk about Florida State and also some of the quarterbacks that he sees emerging as the 2020 season begins. But we start with the news of the day, and that happened at 10:01 yesterday morning. As soon as we went off the air, Duke released that Joanne P. McCallie, their head women's basketball coach, was resigning effective immediately after years of service. In fact, part of it has to do with, at least in the story that's coming out, part of it has to do with a contract dispute after 13 seasons where I'm not sure she was going to get the term she was looking for, and so therefore she just elected to resign as the women's basketball coach.
Well, we wish, first of all, we wish her the best, and I'll get to that in a second. Second of all, Wes, when I got news of this, it was 10:05 a.m. You and I used to joke when we started the radio show, and we called it The Central, that I promise you, we say it every day on the radio show, you know what, the show will end at 10, I promise you something's going to happen at 10:05. It was like clockwork. I mean, it was clockwork, and I swear to you, yesterday at 10:05 a.m., I see this story and just started laughing. I was like, man, it's like good old times of the infamous Packer and Durham, the ACC Central show. But I kid about that. But nevertheless, now Duke is back now looking for a new women's heads basketball coach. Elena Beard's going to join us, come out with the all-time greats from Duke and get in all that stuff. But I was a bit surprised. I mean, obviously, anytime you get contract negotiations, you know how that stuff can go sometimes. But you start talking about three ACC tournament titles, 10 NCAA tournament appearances. Coach did a nice job at Duke. But, again, you know, she had a nice run. Now Duke looks for the next era.
And here is Coach P from social media yesterday, shortly after 10 o'clock, talking about the decision.
I just had a very difficult conversation with a group of women that I love and adore and admire. It was very heartfelt and bittersweet. I am choosing to step away as head coach at Duke. As a coach, in the final year of my contract, uncertainty is natural, and it takes away from confidence and fun. I am pretty sure there's a level of uncertainty amongst the Duke family. I want to bring clarity with great pride for all. Throughout my entire coaching career, I have thrived on providing stability, and I've enjoyed long-term relationships with every program I've had the honor to serve. Clarity and principle over uncertainty must prevail. All current, former, and future Duke women and the entire DWB family are very special to me. I want to provide an opportunity for change, growth, and a sense of security relative to the future of the program. I hope my action allows the team to play free without the burden and uncertainty of their coach's future. I have chosen to forego the majority of my final year of compensation to support my staff during this incredibly challenging and transitional time overall. I am hoping to help pave the way for Duke to make an impactful selection for the fifth coach in Duke women's basketball history. Importantly, I report that I am blessed to be healthy, 100%. I am so grateful and excited for all the new things ahead.
Wish you the very best. As I mentioned, three ACC tournament titles, 10 NCAA tournament appearances, and Duke now looks for the next coach.
Elena Beard is one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest women's basketball player in Duke history, and certainly one of the greatest basketball players in ACC women's basketball history. And she joins us live from Shreveport, Louisiana this morning. First of all, I appreciate you getting up an hour early in the Central time zone to join us. I just want your initial reaction, Elena, about yesterday.
No, I mean, as with anyone, you're definitely surprised, considering how long P has been with the Duke women's basketball team. But with that being said, you know, she said it at the end. You guys just heard it. She's 100% healthy, and that's one concern that always comes to mind when a coach steps down when they have years left on their contract. But at the same time, I respect her. I commend her for understanding that it could potentially be a distraction moving into the next year. And that's not something you want to have as a burden. So I respect her decision to step down, and I wish her all the best.
Elena, more importantly on this, and I kid on this, we've now dubbed this T-Shirt Friday. You have gone beyond the call of duty to just fit right in with us.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is that now that they've implemented the work from home mandate, like, how do you dress? And so this is my daily outfit. I keep it plain and simple with a white T-shirt on, sleeves rolled. Try to put a little style to it, but you got to be comfortable, right?
Elena, let me tell you something. I caught all kinds of grief on this show a week ago because I wasn't wearing pants. And man, you'd have thought I went out and robbed a bank the way the staff treated me. So you and I are connecting again. You know, we hooked up at the ACC tournament. I said, man, that Linda Beard is cool, man. So here you come. In there,
it's all
cool.
About the waist up.
You got it. This is all that matters, right? Nobody needs to know anything else. Exactly right. But on a serious note, though, Coach did Coach did a tremendous job, though. I just mentioned three ACC tournament titles, 10 NCAA tournament titles, NCAA tournament appearances. This is a plum gig, right? There's no doubt that there are going to be people around the country go, wow, the Duke job's open. You can win and win big there. No question.
No, it's, I mean, without doubt, it's Duke, right? It's been funny to sort of see the responses come through, right? Like you said, it's wide open. Everyone wants this job. And you know, just speaking to Coach, you know, P's success, right? She's been extremely successful. What is unfortunate that people sometimes remember the last of your career. And I think everyone needs to keep in mind that she came in and she took this program to new levels. It's just unfortunate that she ended on, you know, sort of a not so good note.
Elena, let's go to, you know, this was a tough year. Haley Gorecki, clearly the best player on that team, but there are some pieces that will come back. And I'm going to jump right to the story that hit me yesterday when I started looking at this, and that is that your former coach, Gail Gesting-Kors, is now interested in returning to coaching. Is that a possibility for Dr. White and Duke University for women's basketball?
I think it would be extremely premature for me to speak on that, considering that I haven't spoken with anyone in that sense. To say the least, I think it would be incredible to have her back. She obviously was a reason why Duke is Duke. You know, I had the opportunity to play with her as well as along with, you know, other great players. And she understands what Duke is about. She understands culture. She understands the foundation that needs to be implemented for Duke to move forward.
You know, coaching transitions are always interesting, Elena, and I don't care what the sport is, football, basketball, baseball, whatever. Does Duke find itself right now in a better position than it was 15 years ago, you think, based on what Coach P was able to do. And, of course, the lay of the land of the ACC. I mean, Louisville's fantastic. Mm-hmm. We talk about women's basketball in the ACC, the quality of depth. I mean, this is a very, very competitive conference.
It is extremely competitive conference. You know, I've been playing at the professional level. I played at the professional level before retiring for 15 years, and I probably had like 8 coaches. So just going through that process of transitioning is going to be hard on everyone, the organization, the players, the new coach coming in. And it's going to take a lot of work to get Duke back to where everyone expects Duke to be. But like you said, it's an extremely competitive conference. Louisville has been, you know, at the top of their game. Notre Dame had a down year, but with the hire of Neil Ivey, I think they're going to be right back on the map. So it's a matter of bringing in someone that truly understands that conference and the women that Duke has in place right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because the conversation, you know, whether it's Coach G on one side or it's somebody who's an emerging coach or the names that got kicked to me yesterday, and I thought that was interesting because, you know, there are emerging people who would be maybe a first time for Duke, and Duke might be able to actually hit, given the pandemic and all the other landscape things we're dealing with here, Elena, Duke might find somebody who is, you know, Mike Krzyzewski type, if you know what I mean. A young guy or a young person who's gone in, done something well for a few years, and then all of a sudden hits it with a program like this.
They have a lot of decisions to make, but I'm interested to hear, like, who have you, you know, who are those emerging coaches? What are those names on that list?
How about Elena Beard?
Yeah, what?
How about Elena Beard on the sideline?
You know, it's I am not naive to the point to think that I can come in and turn a program around. Like I've played for many years. I've been extremely successful. I've had the opportunity to play with some great coaches and with great players. And obviously I can bring that experience, but to come in as a head coach, I understand that, you know, it's people that are highly qualified and more qualified than me to come in and take over. at the same time, you know, I just made like a tremendous career transition to the venture capital space in Silicon Valley. So it's people ask, like, why did you do that? Because it's a challenge. It's not very much that I know. I can always come back to coaching, and I understand that. But at the same time, I wanted to challenge myself, my skill set, in another way to where if I do decide to come back to coaching, I'm able to provide a little bit more.
Okay, I respect all that, and you're still my girl and everything, but I got to tell you something. You could stand there and go, hey, look, right there in the rafters. You see that in the rafters? Look, I got this done. You can get this done.
I mean, I have no doubt, you know, that I'm capable. But at the same time, I'm not, like I said, I it would be premature of me to say, like, I can come in and take over a program like Duke. Yes, I'm in the rafters, but at the same time, a lot of great players don't translate to great coaches. But at the same time, I've always said that Duke is a place that I would consider. And it's the only place that I would consider.
I know this much. Mm-hmm. If we had if for argument's sake, if you did become just play with me here a second, all right? If you became the head coach at Duke, we got a Coach K, we say goodbye to Coach P. There's talk about Coach G. Would you go by Coach B, Coach AB? I mean, what's the story there? What would you go with? What would be the line there?
It'll just be AB. That's all. AB. AB has stuck with me for a very long time. It started when I was in high school playing with the AAU team. A parent of mine had a hard time saying my name because clearly my parents forgot the I, so he always called me Alana instead of Alina. And he gave me the name AB, and it just stuck with me.
I like
throughout
it.
Throughout my career.
I like it. Well, listen, have a great holiday weekend. We appreciate you getting up early with us.
You too. Absolutely. Anytime for you, too.
Hey, by the way, best to your family. And I will say this, that if people have, you know, maybe forgotten in a few years just how great Elena Beard was, a week from tomorrow, Elena Beard, ACC Legends, right here on ACC Network, starts at noon and runs 10 hours. So, I mean, come on, we're going to lock people in, okay?
I love it. I love it. I love the ACC network, too.
Take care. Thanks again. Here it is, a week from tomorrow, Saturday, July 11th. Shreveport's Elena Beard went to Durham and lit it up one of the all-time greats in ACC women's basketball, starts at high noon next Saturday. 2,600 points, 500-plus assists, 400-plus steals, three-time All-American, and the first women's basketball player to accomplish that statistical feat, and you'll see it all, or at least the high marks of it, next Saturday at noon right here on ACC Network. All right. Just getting underway, Pac. When we come back, we said when we came back on the air about a month ago that politics potentially could have a role in the return of college football. South Carolina governor has laid the groundwork for that when Packer and Durham continue.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. We've told you we're streaming live on the ESPN app. Guys on SiriusXM channel 371. Thanks again to Elena Beard. Talking about the now open vacancy for the Duke women's basketball program. We'll see what happens on that front. Yesterday, Wes, the governor of the great state of South Carolina, the Palmetto State, Henry McMaster, Republican, University of South Carolina alum, made it pretty clear that this COVID spike, which South Carolina is going through like a lot of other states, said if it continues, heads up, there will be no high school or college football. And, you know, there is this team that plays in the upstate that's pretty good called Clemson. I suspect that any re-election campaigns funds were probably put on hold once that statement was made. But nevertheless, this is a serious matter for not only the state of South Carolina, but the rest of the country. And we keep harping on this. You know, how can you make life better for college football and your favorite teams and sports? Well, be safe and be smart. I mean, that's what you got to do between now and forever, it seems like. So coming from the high heels of Columbia, South Carolina, that's what the word was from Governor McMaster.
Well, Mark, I want to add that he is not the only state chief executive to make this kind of comment in the last 72 hours. Brian Kemp, the Republican governor in Georgia, and to a degree, Roy Cooper in North Carolina are among the three and who have said along the same lines. Now, some of this is, you know, the wear a mask campaign that's going on and that kind of deal. But the idea that this is now, it speaks to what you said a couple days ago. This is a fairly important 4 to 5 weeks for where college football may be going in 2020. So Governor McMaster in South Carolina, Governor Kemp in Georgia, Governor Cooper, North Carolina, and I'm sure we could go to the other states. I mean, I know Kay Ivey in Alabama made some comments the other day along these lines. This has now gotten to a point where the surge in cases and things like that is a concern to the leadership about crowds. And I, you know what? I get it. I mean, I understand that part of it.
I say this all the time, you know, if you don't like wearing a mask, and I'm not going to go political on you, we don't do that, but if you don't like wearing a mask, hey, right. I get it, but you know what, you kind of, if you love college sports, you love the NFL, you love Major League Baseball, you want your sports back, you got to make the effort, and you got to be smart. I mean, take care of yourself, take care of the people around you, and hey, this is going to be an uncomfortable time. It already has been. It's been the most ridiculous year I've ever seen in terms of the first half. We kid around about, hey, July 1st was the second half of the season, if you will. And from a college sports perspective, Wes, these next 5 weeks are beyond critical. None of us know how this is going to play out. Mm-hmm. None of us do. And I keep telling you, the smartest people in the room, the Power Five commissioners, Jack Swarbrick at Notre Dame, when they make statements, pay attention to what's going on. So how can you make life better? Well, here's an idea. Number one, be smart. And if you're going to go out in public, just wear a mask. I mean, I don't like wearing it, but guess what? When I'm in public, I wear a mask. Simple as that. Now, granted, I don't leave the basement very often, but nevertheless, when you do, just do your part. It cannot hurt the process, right? It just cannot hurt the process. So I can't emphasize that enough. And like I said, when we it's July the 3rd, what will the conversation be a month from now on August the 3rd? I have no idea. Oof. And nobody else does. But we all have to do our part to make life a little bit easier and better and try to flatten the curve.
Well, let me just kind of follow up on that by using this analogy. And it's not an analogy. It's really all you have to do is scan through social media or log on to the school's website of the team you follow. This is an important time. How do you know it's an important time? You can't find a college football coach in the Southeast that's not telling you to wear a mask. They're doing that because they want to have a sport and they want to have a season. And they know we have reached a, you know, kind of a tipping point in the next 30 days. And I think that's why you've seen just about every coach in the ACC, you know, show you a mask of them in a mask or whatever the case may be. The other aspect about this is the decision process on this will impact football. Football will not make the decision. That's the other issue that we're looking at here. This is a health and safety concern of states, and that's where we talked about, Mark, back in some of the old Packer and Durham Weekly shows and even in the Q series about how state governments and public institutions in the ACC footprint, which you said several times, is 10 states, and that's another thing to think about. It's not just a, you know, a quadrant. It's the length of the Atlantic seaboard in many respects, and that's the thing that keeps coming back to me. The multiplicity of people involved in this up and down the East Coast is challenging. Now, fortunately, the news in the Northeast from a case perspective is better than it was, but the Southeast is having some flare-ups here. And to be honest with you, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida are three of the states that are really in contention. It's particularly Georgia and Florida in the top five in terms of cases yesterday. So that's why these governors and these political leaders are making these statements. And they're just talking about, you know, what the process is going to be if those numbers can't come down.
Be smart. Do your part, right? I mean, it's just like no different than what you're going to pack for a tailgate weekend or whatever. Hey, get your mask on if you're going to go out and about. And like I said, I'm not a doctor. Don't play one. Not looking for a political statement here. But I just think whatever you can do to help the big picture. We're all into this. I mean, there's nobody that's excluded from all. You don't have to do anything wrong. I mean, we all have to do our part here. So, you know, when a governor makes a comment like that, if that doesn't perk your ears up a little bit, it should. And if you're going to take the cavalier approach, it doesn't apply to me. Yes, it does. It applies to all of us. So, again, just do your part. And if you're uncomfortable wearing a mask, I get it. Like I said, I don't like wearing it either. But every time I'm out and about, I have it on. And if it makes a little bit of a difference, hey, it will help for all of us. So be smart out there. Be safe. Take care of you, your family, and more importantly, even take care of others. Even if you have that mindset of, oh, I'm not going to do that. Come on, man. We want to have a college football season. We want our sports back. So do your part to take care of business here.
By the way, before we get to the bottom of the hour, and E.J. Manuel going to join us, Josh Pastner of Georgia Tech was with us yesterday. We covered a lot of things. But one of the things he specifically talked about was the importance of football in kind of steering the rest of college athletics next year.
Regarding the season, look, I you know, obviously we're going to do whatever our bosses tell us to do. So, I mean, our guys, myself, we all want to play. Every coach wants to play. Every student athlete wants to play. No one's going to do anything without the first and foremost thinking of the health and safety of the student athletes and the staff. So that's going to be decisions made not by coaches. It's going to be made by administrators and presidents of universities or institutes, and then obviously with state and local health officials. So it will be interesting. Yes, we need football. We all want football to play. I do believe, again, you know me, I'm an internal optimist. I look at the glass as overflowing. I just think there are so many incredible minds working on these as in terms of science and doctors and all those type of things that at some point by the time we start in our season in November, they'll have it figured out. Maybe they'll have the virus understood even more. They'll have some kind of therapeutic drug, hopefully a vaccine at some point. But I just think they've got to have that. Now, I do know from what I hear, is they've got to find a way to play the NCAA tournament. You two would know it better than I would, but I think it would not be good for the NCAA not have to have back-to-back years, because as you guys know, the NCAA's revenue really comes from the men's basketball NCAA tournament. So to have 2 years in a row of not having it, it would be a hard hit for everybody, especially a hard hit. It's already a hard hit as it is, and then you kind of have a double whammy on that. But you're, so it's a very – it's a balance, because kids – the student-athletes want to play, the coaches want to play, but you've also – you know, they're student athletes, they're not athlete students, and you know, the health and safety of everybody is going to be first and foremost on the decisions.
His coach, he's all over it, and he's right, 100% right. In fact, I even go back to our interview with Mike Bray, Wes, same kind of sentiment that, hey, you know what, you're rooting for football so everything else can come into play. For us to get the football, I go back to the start of this whole segment. You know what, wear your mask, do your part, be safe, wash your hands, do whatever it takes to take care of you, your family, and the people around you, because we all have to go to this full throttle. This, everybody is in, all right? Tag, we're it. Let's go.
All right, when we come back, Packer and Durham, Lexi Joseph's going to join us from Duke Women's Lacrosse. But first, we check in with EJ Manuel. This might be our first ever guest on the way to a tea time, by the way, Pack. Very exciting. ACC Network returns right after this.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
It's Packer and Durham on a Friday. And Wes, a busy show, needless to say. Many, many guests coming our way, including one that's certainly right now desperate to get on the air with us because he's headed to the golf course. EJ Manuel, man, how you doing?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Well, not as good as you, because we're going to sit here and work for a little bit while you're sitting there keeping it in the short grass.
Yeah, I'm going to try. Hey, look, that's the biggest thing right now is trying to keep that keep the ball in play. So we'll see. I'm playing with my dad and a couple of his buddies over in Ahoskie, North Carolina, so I'm really excited about it.
Wow, you're on the road taking the game out, huh? You're going over there in Eastern North Carolina to get it done, huh?
Yeah. So it's about an hour 15 from where we live in Chesapeake. So we got on the road bright and early at 6:45 this morning. So be teeing off at 8:30. And, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, I guarantee you, man, that will be That's a blast. Awesome. Perfect way to get the weekend started. But before you get to golf, let's talk a little Florida State football. New man in charge with Mike Norvell, certainly been an interesting last month, but I think this team probably came together given what they had to go through from that perspective. But what about Mike Norvell in year one, EJ? What do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited for Coach Norvell to get started. I think the biggest thing for him is just getting the command from that team. Obviously, the guys, you know, some of these dudes were recruited by Coach Taggart, who's moved on to FAU, but I think the biggest thing with Coach Norvell is he has the energy. I think he's going to have the respect from his team, obviously coming from the program that he built at Memphis, being a top 10 offense for the past, I think, 3 out of 4 years that he was there. So I'm excited for it. And he actually held a, you know, like a town hall webinar on Zoom maybe 2 months ago for former players, which I really appreciated. You know, a lot of times these coaches, they come in and they don't really give the former players a chance to get to know them like they do the players or the active players. And so he spoke for about an hour, and I mean, man, maybe 400 guys were on that call, you know, all the way from the 60s or the 70s until, you know, my era. And so it was really cool to hear him speak. And I'm excited for his, you know, the beginning of his era there. Obviously, they have a big game, you know, first game of the season in Atlanta. So it's going to be a huge test for him, but I think the guys will be ready.
EJ, here's the other thing, too. There's certain guys on that roster that are going to play this year that this is their third head coach. Marvin Wilson is one of them. James Blackman is one of them. I mean, they're a handful of guys. This is their third administration. You went through coaching changes in the NFL. What are some of these college guys going to go through now with a brand new guy, and you got to kind of almost reinvest, I guess?
Yeah, you're right, Wes. I think the biggest thing is you want to show that they can trust you. A lot of times when coaches come in, it's about trust. It's the trust factor. And, you know, they got to put their name down with you as a player. And if you go out there and you're in practice, you're inconsistent, or you're showing some of the same things that you know, they were seeing from the past 2 years as far as, you know, legal procedures, not knowing where to line up, not knowing where to be on the, you know, each play and just not playing consistently smart football, that's going to hurt you. But I think if you can go out there from day one and show Coach Norvell and his staff that he can trust you, I know guys like Marvin Wilson are going to step up and make sure they're making plays and also make sure that the other guys are doing what they need to do to, you know, be ready to go out there and play. Because, again, these guys, they want to win. And I always said this, the best way to get drafted high in the NFL is to go to a team that's a winner. And so hopefully they understand that, and I think they'll get it done.
EJ, I think that's a really good point because, you know, I think of Florida State, anybody you ask anybody about Florida State football, you think about the swagger, the championships, the unis, right? Dope Campbell, yep. Especially on a Saturday night, and here comes Renegade and all that stuff. But the last couple of years have not been Florida State football. You know, and you still got dudes down there. I don't care what anybody says. There's talent still all over the place, and that offensive line gets figured out. I just got to figure the want to. Hey, here's a new coach, a new era. They're probably sick and tired of hearing about Clemson winning all these games, and that's what Florida State used to do. I just think this is a program that's ready to bust loose again. And, you know, for a guy like Big Marvin to come back, who could have taken the money, gone to the NFL and say, listen, this hadn't been what I signed up for. But the fact that he came back, he's already made that stand. I think he talked about how this team got galvanized from that experience last month. I think Florida State could be a very, very dangerous team.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, they have the weapons. I think they've had the weapons for a while now. You know, it's just a matter of them just bringing it all together. Again, these guys have to play team football. You know, a lot of times from what I saw, you know, as a fan, once I left Florida State, it didn't seem like they had that same camaraderie that we had when I was there. Seemed like some guys were, you know, almost trying to do a little too much and some guys weren't doing enough. And so I think they can collectively bring it all together, which, you know, with Coach Norvell at the helm, I think he'll be the kind of the glue that they need in that program to get those guys to play to their full potential.
EJ, was the webinar you guys did with Mike Norvell after the incident, I guess, or situation that occurred with Marvin Wilson and Coach Norvell? Because I thought that was something that really, it could be a spark to really light this program on fire once they get going on the practice field, I think.
No, it was actually before, but, you know, big shout out to Marvin for even speaking up on that. At the end of the day, man, hey, Everyone has to be held accountable, and I had a ton of respect for Marvin, not necessarily, you know, trying to put the coach on blast. I don't think he was doing it. I just think at the end of the day, we all have to be held accountable, and I think that's where, you know, unification comes from. You know, everybody be honest, everybody be open, and if things weren't, you know, necessarily said how he thought it was said, speak on it. He's a grown man, too. So I think that is, like you said, Wes, is going to create, I think, a situation where everybody's bought in and everybody also feels like they have a voice. You know, they can speak up. If something that is not right, they can speak up on it. And, you know, I think that was actually something that was positive for that program more than something that was negative.
EJ, you mentioned the game in Atlanta. I think that we're going to get the answer about Florida State really early in the season. You mentioned West Virginia, the first game. Granted, Neil Brown's got a kind of a renovation project going on in Morgantown. But again, they still have athletes, and that will be a team that wants to compete. And there's also that road trip to Boise State. You know, going to that blue turf is never easy. I know Virginia went up there a couple years ago and spanked them pretty good, but that doesn't happen very often. We know what happened last year in the opener of Boise State. Have played that game in Tallahassee. So I think two really good tests for Florida State in the first month of the season. We'll have a pretty good handle on the Noles by the end of September.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, you start out in Atlanta. It's not necessarily a home game, but, you know, the Seminole fans will be there in attendance against West Virginia. I think Florida State should have a good chance against those guys. You know, and then again, like you said, versus Boise State, they need to look at that as an opportunity to get some payback because, again, Boise State came out with a freshman quarterback. And don't get me wrong, he had a great year as a freshman, but I think they need to go out there and use that as a statement game to go across the country, play on that blue turf like you were saying, Pack, and just go out there and play good football. Again, I think Florida State a lot of times was beating themselves. Even if you go back and watch that game versus Arizona State in the bowl game, in the Sun Bowl last year, you know, Blackman had four interceptions, and I think the last one was taken back for a touchdown. So, you know, as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot with, you know, pre-snap penalties, illegal procedures, blocks in the back, things like that, it's almost like shooting yourself in the foot, you know, counterproductive for your offense and your defense. I think they'll be fine.
All right, before we get to the scouting report on your golf game, what is Is Florida State capable of being a team that challenges Clemson in the Atlantic? I mean, we talk about Louisville. A lot of people excited about Satterfield's second year, and for good reason. But is Florida State kind of like right there in that group as well, EJ?
I think I'd be remiss if I said they weren't in that group. I think they'd have to show me the first couple weeks of the season if they're really in that group. I think with what they have on that roster, they definitely have the talent. It's a matter of them just going out there and playing football. Clemson has been consistent for the past 7 years in the ACC. So, you know, I know they're fully loaded from first string, second string, third string. And, you know, that's not even me being a Eric McLean guy. That's just being honest. You know what I mean? I'm a no by blood, but at the end of the day, that's just me being real. And I think the infrastructure that Coach Sweeney has built in that program, they're going to be tough to beat. So, I do think that if the Noles, I know they get them at home this year, so hopefully if the fan base is, you know, even allowed to be at the game, I do think that they'll try to help will the Seminoles to, you know, at least a closer game than what it was last year with Clemson.
All right, EJ, quickly switching gears here. Do you know how many golf balls you have in your bag right now?
My dad asked me that this morning, right? And he's like, hey, you got some balls, right? I bought a set before I came home, actually. So I got about 20, and I'm hoping not to lose more than 8. So I should be all right.
You know, that to me is always an indicator of a person's golf game. Without ever seeing a swing, I go, how many balls you got in your bag? And if somebody ever answers, I got 2, then I go, man, this dude's a player now. You come to the court with 2 balls, you can play. You come in there with 3 dozen, man, you're going to be out there for a long, long day.
Nah. Hey, look, I don't have 3 dozen, but like I said, I got a 20-pack of Pro V1, so I should be all right. We'll see.
You'll be all right.
Ooh, okay. All right. All right, real quick. You can't take Trevor Lawrence, and you can't take Sam Howell. Who's the next best quarterback in the ACC? Who are you most excited to see this year?
Man, that's a tough question. I would say De'Aaron King I'm going to go with James Blackman. I think James is growing, man. I think, obviously, De'Aaron is coming over from Houston, and he's going to be with Coach Lashley over in Miami. I mean, they're going to be a tough team. I felt like Miami was really a consistent quarterback away from being a really, a real contender in the Coastal. But also James Blackman, this being his, I know you said his 4th offensive coordinator change or coaching change, but I think James is going to be another quarterback in the mix this year that if he's able to play and stay healthy, I think he'll be fine. I also would say Louisville's quarterback. I think he's someone that is special. I mean, the way that he played last year, to me, he's a baby Lamar Jackson. I think the way that he was able to stretch the field, and Tutu Atwell being at one of his receivers, and then he has, that running back, you know, I think he can be somebody that puts up a lot of numbers. And we all know Coach Satterfield likes to spread the ball out and give those guys chances to make plays. So, I'm excited for this season, man. I think we're going to have a lot of good quarterback play. I know that EJ's manual to success is going to be a lot of quarterback driven segments. So, you know, I'm excited about that and talk some QB play, but, it's going to be a fun year, man. I'm just hoping that things work out, you know, health-wise with what's going on with COVID-19 and that the guys can stay healthy and go out there and have a good season.
Well, listen, keep in the short grass and keep it to 3 hot dogs or less at the turn, all right?
I will. You guys have a good day, all right? Good seeing you guys.
All right, that's EJ Manuel, Pack. Always fun to visit with him and tee it high and let it fly, right?
Hey, you know what, Wes? As soon as we get done, and something tells me you'll probably head to the course right as we speak, right? 10:01.
24 hours from now, I will be guilty as charged. Yeah, there's no question. Stay tuned. When we come back, Lexi Joseph is a star on Duke's women's lacrosse team. We're going to talk to Lexi, a native of Philadelphia, about the awkward way the spring unfolded and also what's transpired since then. Looking forward to our visit with her when Packer and Durham continues on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. Hope everybody is safe this weekend. Crazy stuff happens July 4th, man. So just be careful out there, all right? Just be careful out there.
Hey, By the way, take care of your pets this weekend, too. All the July 4th stuff tends to get pets on the scurry.
Yeah, Chester and Fuller do not like July 4th. That's why I'm hanging here while the girls are down at the beach. But nevertheless, we'll get to that later on. Mm-hmm. Right now, making her debut on our show, Lexi Joseph from Duke Lacrosse joins us. Lexi, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, man. Listen, first of all, welcome to the show. We've been following you in your career at Duke, and it's one thing to talk lacrosse, which we'll get into, but congratulations on what you've done in the classroom, too. You were really getting after.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I will ask you the annual.
All right, so
I will ask you the traditional question at the end of this interview, but I won't do it now. But this whole pandemic, I mean, this has got to be crazy as a student athlete, right? I mean, this, you got to find places to work out. The season ends, the whole routine. How difficult has that been?
It's been really weird at first. You know, me and my dad were just like trying to jump fences to get on fields. Me and my brother were trying to find places to run. But eventually Philadelphia's in this like yellowish green phase where fields are open, but you have to socially distance. So I finally can get back into a routine of running and all that. And I'm coming back from an injury to my knee. So that was also weird trying to rehab over the phone, trying to do PT by myself. So it's been very weird, but the team has been really helpful. We did a lot of workouts together over the phone, and we send each other workouts. I mean, I've been using like YouTube ab workouts, which I've never done before, but they work pretty well, I think. So I've been just trying to make the best of it. And luckily, like my dad and my brother have been really helpful. My mom also, we built a rebounder out of wood, which is pretty good because I couldn't do wall ball at first because she would not let me throw the ball against the house. So we had to figure that out. So we've been just kind of making it work.
I love it.
All right. Now, wait a second. I want to ask you, you just kind of slipped this in at the beginning, and I give you credit for this. Tell me about jumping fences to get on fields with your dad. That sounds like that might have been an adventure, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was weird, and we've never really had to do that before because in Philadelphia, I mean, there's hundreds of fields to go on, but all of them were, like, locked. My old high school that I usually train at, they put caution tape around everything. There's security guards there, so we really couldn't go anywhere. But we found this one field in Germantown, and everyone just kind of, like, goes over the gate and then under the gate to get into it. I don't know if that's okay or not, but everyone was on the field, so we were like, we might as well just join in. And then we finally found a field that was open, so we were like, okay, we don't have to do that anymore.
You've been busy, and this is why you're such a cool person to talk to. It's one thing to talk sports. You've done a great job in the classroom, as I talked about, which we'll get to, but you're also an assistant coach, and you're helping low-income communities in terms of not only the sport of lacrosse, but just really life in general. Talk about how fulfilled that is in terms of what it does for you giving back to the community like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's always just been something that's been a part of my family. You know, my mom is very much into being in the community, doing what you can for the community. And if you have it, share it. So, you know, I have this knowledge of lacrosse and experience of lacrosse, so why not share it with people? I mean, I was extremely excited to hear about, when I was in high school, this opportunity to coach an all-black lacrosse team. I mean, that was unheard of, and I never thought I'd get to do that. And I was just so excited. And, you know, working with Icons with Coach Jasmine has been something that has just helped me grow as a player. You know, learning how to coach as, like, while you're still being coached by somebody in college is a really weird process. You start to learn, like, now I understand why Coach Kimmel got frustrated, because she just told us to do that. And, like, I see what she's talking about now because I'm coaching and I'm seeing that, you know, girls don't always listen the first time, or, you know, players don't always listen the first time. So it's taught me how to be a more patient player and a better learner. And it's just great seeing how happy the girls are to have someone, you know, in college that looks like them playing, and to come back and just be with them. Like, not every practice we have is about lacrosse. Most practices are about you know, building self-esteem, learning how to be a strong woman, learning how to be, you know, vocal about things you're passionate about. And I think that's also important. You know, sports are great and sports help you a lot in life, but it's also good to give these girls, you know, tools to help them get to wherever they want to go. And that's like the best part for me, is how excited they are about school and their subjects they learn. It's just really amazing to see such a group of great girls and coaches together trying to do something good, like within the realm of lacrosse.
Lexi, what's it mean, changing the landscape by working with young kids of color and then changing the landscape by being a woman of color playing a predominantly white sport in lacrosse in this country? I mean, are there parallels there? I mean, are there things that you've learned, things that you've experienced? And then, you know, let's be honest, the last month and a half here has been one of change in our country and the promotion of that change. I mean, do you see all this tying together in a way?
100%. I am a strong, very firm believer in everything is interconnected, and like nothing happens on purpose, like nothing happens by accident. It's all on purpose, in my opinion. And so what I mean by that is, you know, this summer when coronavirus happened and I wasn't able to coach in person, we had to go online. And that was my first time talking to the full team of Icons. And, you know, the first conversation we had was like very hard for me, because a lot of these girls were talking and asking me questions of like, why do I get yelled at when I'm on the field by refs? And why do other parents say stuff about me? And why do other girls not want to play lacrosse with me? And these questions they're asking are the same things I asked myself when I was playing. I'm not that old, so like 6 years ago. And so it's just very, you know, that was disheartening for me to hear that they're going through the same things I went through. And, you know, the only kind of silver lining I had in that was that I was able to share my experience and show them that even though those things are happening to you and people might perceive you as a lacrosse player in this certain capacity, you're able to make it to this level and there's nothing really stopping you. And so that was the first thing that really shocked me. And then to know that, like, they have to deal with, you know, wanting to play lacrosse, they're not able to because of coronavirus, and they were dealing with these racist issues and microaggressions on the field, to then see what's happening on the news with George Floyd and, you know, Breonna Taylor and all these people of color, is also disheartening, because they're looking at the screen and saying, well, you know, that could be my dad or that could have been me. And it's hard for them, you know, I don't want to speak for them, but it's hard. Like me as a kid, it was hard to see that and think that, you know, I'm going to end up at Duke. Like when you see those images on TV, that's not what you automatically think. When those images are displayed as a young black or brown kid, that's what you think could possibly happen to you or your family. And that's very hard to think about as a 12-year-old. Some of these girls are 9 years old. And so that was like the hardest thing for me, I think, in the beginning of this coronavirus and, you know, issues of social justice that just occurred.
I mentioned when we started this interview, we'll talk lacrosse and what you've done giving back to the community is awesome. But you've also done a great job in the classroom. First 2 years, ACC Academic Honor Roll for you. We always ask every student athlete that comes on the show this question. And given the academic integrity and reputation of Duke University and your success, I'm curious to hear your answer to this. That what's been the hardest course that you've had so far at Duke?
Math. I took calculus 1 and 2, and that was definitely the hardest class I've ever taken. In high school, I got A's in all my math classes. It wasn't too hard in high school. Obviously, college is different, but I didn't think it'd be that hard. And my brother, he was a math major at UMD, and you know, he was my tutor, and I was like, I should be fine. I have a math major. I was great in high school. And it just hit, and it was hard, and that was the first time I think I was ever really confused in a class, like listening to a teacher and it's not registering. I've never had that happen before. The only kind of good thing was that everyone in the class was kind of confused too. We were all struggling together, so it made it a little bit better.
Wes, you can relate to that, can't you? Confused in a math class?
Yeah. Absolutely. Lexi, except my problems with math started in the fifth grade. So I'm I jumped way ahead of you. I didn't wait till college. Mine started happening in the fifth grade. So, and it's carried on till today. And I'm 54 years old. So I'm glad to know you've cleared the hurdle, though. All right, Lexi Joseph, you're fantastic. We look forward to following your career here. You've done a marvelous job. We wish you all the health. Get back safely, and we look forward to seeing you back out playing Duke lacrosse, but also following your work with Icons and some of the other great things you're doing with your teammates and at Duke University, and appreciate you spending time with us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
You bet. Lexi Joseph of Duke Women's Lacrosse. That was what a fascinating young lady, Pac.
Well-rounded, understands giving back to the community. That starts with parents. They get it, you know, trickle down to their kids, and that's always cool to see that. I mean, she's terrific in the classroom. She's taking care of business. You mentioned it's a predominantly white sport, and here she is going, oh, man, I'm going to go play. Let's do it. And not only am I going to play, I'm going to go back home and give back to my community and have other kids understand it. You can, too, walk this path and get a great degree and play a sport that you love and being part of a team. I mean, that's what it's all about, is young people, again, taking ownership and doing really, really positive work on the course, on the court, in the classroom, back home. That's double thumbs up for me, no doubt.
You bet. You bet. Look forward to following Lexi Joseph when she gets back to campus here in the fall for Duke as well. We go to the 9 o'clock hour of Friday, T-shirt Friday on Packer and Durham. And by the way, the TBT starts next week. There's a whole quarantine there, but there's also a lot of ACC talent. So we decided to jump into the ultimate ACC TBT rosters as that event gets underway this weekend.
Packer and Durham.